everyone. Welcome into the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Sylvester, and we've got a great guest on today. It's Jason Collette. He's on Twitter at his name, Jason Collette, and I'm at Bobby Fantasy Pro. Jason is a columnist for RotoWire and podcaster for FanGraphs. Jason, thanks for coming on the show. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty well, all things considered. How are you doing
sure.
today?
I'm doing pretty good, although I found out that you love Whataburger, and we need to talk about this a little bit, okay? Because I tried Whataburger once, and I was very underwhelmed. You're going to have to talk me into it. Did I just have one bad experience, or are you like a big-time mustard guy?
Both. Both. I mean, I was raised in Texas, so I am a little biased, obviously. So, you know, mustard is the thing in Texas, and so is Whataburger. It's been there since 1950. And so, yeah, everybody's entitled to a bad experience. I will tell you, I had to drive down to Florida this past week for family matters and stopped at the Whataburger, stopped at one on the way down through Jacksonville, Florida, and one on the way out through Jacksonville, Florida. Because they're the closest ones I can get.
That's a bummer for you.
For me, because they're nowhere near Charlotte where I live. And so that's the thing. I mean, it gets back to comfort food because I grew up on it. You know, my father was working there at one point late in his career. And so my father's no longer with us. So it's one of these things where, like, when I go there, I feel it's like one of these cheesy commercials. Like, you feel like you're at home. That's what it feels like for me.
That's cool.
I've got a Whataburger coffee mug. I have a Yeti that my wife got me for anniversary present, I think. So it's like I've got it, and it's part of my brand. And yeah, I know some people don't dig it, and they like other things, and that's fine. I mean, even here in Charlotte, Freddy's is my go-to here in Charlotte. It's the closest
Freddy's
thing.
Freddy's is good, too. Yeah.
Freddy's is good stuff, man. I think they do a really good job. And yeah, it's red and white instead of orange and white. Maybe it's the McDowell's of Whataburger. I don't know. I like it. But the closest, you know, even then, I've got to go up to Concord near the Speedway. Or I've got to go over the state line to South Carolina to go get some. But it's worth it because it's good.
I love that you're so impassioned about food. You are my kind of dude. And, you know, I'm going to give Whataburger another try because when I tried it, it was at an airport. I don't know if I've ever had food that was that good at an airport besides, what's it called, Sbarro, just because it's pizza. You know what I mean? So I'll try Whataburger again just for you.
You were at Love Field?
Yeah, I was.
Dallas. Yeah, I think that's the only one I'm aware of where there is one. In the airport, because when I go to Houston, no, I'm taking it back. Houston, Bush Intercontinental has one because last time I was there on a business trip, I went two terminals over to go find it.
Baby, that's awesome. That's like me with Lou Malnati's. I'll drive up to Chicago just to get a bunch of bunch of deep dish pizza.
That's good stuff too. My wife's from Chicago, and my friend Craig just sent down a Taste of Chicago box for my wife and I to Lou Malnati's in there.
Yeah, did you get the Portillo's in it?
Yes. And we got Garrett's popcorn.
Oh, so jealous. I need to do that.
Good stuff.
All right. Well, we're talking, besides food today, we're talking sleepers. We're talking an all sleepers team. And so we're going to start at the catcher position. And you guys know all of my sleepers. I'm going to chime in, remind you guys of who I like in case, you know, we do hear MLB's coming back soon and we're going to start looking at spring training and drafts and everything like that. But I'm not going to dive into the analysis that you've probably heard four or five times from me at this point. We're going to get Jason's takes. We're going to start at the catcher position. Who do you like as a sleeper, Jason?
You know, for the catcher position, I'm going with Danny Jansen only because I see a lot of recency bias in the market on him. In 2019 going in, a lot of people liked him and he flopped. But he got better as the season went on towards the end. And we see, you know, the catcher position is so tough. And, you know, some recent guys have blown that curve for us. Now, everybody's not going to come up and beat Gary Sanchez, right? But Danny Jansen is good. And I like that Toronto lineup. I like the park. If we have a season, he's going to be able to play against all the Eastern clubs. But I like him because, like, his current ADP, average ADP is 306. And last year, I want to say it was at least 75 points higher than that. And so with all that recency bias, I have been back in on Jansen in all the leagues that I've drafted him where he's in the player pool.
Yeah, so Danny Jansen, this is an interesting case. He's one of these catchers that just shredded throughout the minor leagues. Like, he was way better in the minors than Will Smith. And Will Smith came up for, what, 200 at-bats, and everyone thinks he's a monster just because he had a good run. Danny Jansen has historically been a much better hitter. And then he comes up and he struggled last year because of bad luck. I mean, you can look at baseballsavant.com quality of contact. And it says that he was one of the most unlucky hitters in all of baseball. His true WOBA was 275. His expected WOBA based on the quality of contact was 314. That's in the same range as guys like Scott Kingery, Adam Jones, Jonathan Villar. Now, those aren't great names, but it is so much better than how he actually performed. I mean, 275, that puts him down around, let me see here, Jared Dyson, Freddie Galvis. Yuck. No, that's not who he actually is. I think Danny Jansen can be a top 10 fantasy catcher this year. And he's one of these names that he keeps coming up in these podcasts that we do because a lot of analysts in the industry love Danny Jansen.
It's good stuff. Like I said, recency bias burns a lot of fantasy players. Yeah, I'm not taking that guy again. Well, those are the guys I love. In fact, every year for the RotoWire Draft Magazine, I write an article about value on the scrap heap, and I put together a roster of guys that went for single digits. And it's not just like sleeper rookies. A lot of it is like last year's garbage. Like, oh, I don't want that guy, and he goes undrafted. You pick him up in the reserves, and all of a sudden he's returning a double digit profit on your reserve pick. I mean, that's how fantasy leagues are won. It's by, you know, paying attention, going after what other people don't want. And if they're overlooking something, go grab it. And I think that's what the market's doing here.
So are you grabbing Danny Jansen in a one catcher league? Or would you prefer just to go up and get a Omar Navarez, Yadier Molina, Christian Vasquez type?
So, you know, I did a number of leagues this year. I did three one-catcher leagues, and in one league, I think I paid the premium on Realmuto. Another league, I paid a premium on Grandal. And then in the other league, I think I ended up with Jorge Alfaro. That was really where I went. It's just, and one of them was a draft, and the other, I take that back. All of them were auctions. And for me, my long-term strategy, if you will, for handling leagues is I only do auctions in the single league formats and I only do drafts in the mixed league. I like keeping them separate. And so the ending up with Realmuto in the mixed league auction was just because, you know, he came out early and I'm looking at, okay, these are the values that I have and I'm just going to go with it. And I actually got him a little cheaper than what I had him there. So it was really a first time because I, you know, got caught up in things, but I tend not to be the guy that pays for one of those top three catchers. Outside of Grandal this year. Grandal is somebody that I considered an MVP candidate, like finishing in the top 10, just because I love that White Sox lineup. I love the fact he's going to hit in the middle of it and that he can play some first base and get extra playing time there. And what he's going to do to that pitching staff with his defensive ability. So I really like him as an MVP candidate if the voters look at all the pieces and not just the numbers and where the team finishes in the standings.
And his on-base percentages was .380 last year. I mean, he plays almost every day, 513 at-bats, 28 bombs, .380 on-base percentage, and he helps so much defensively. Him leaving that Brewers rotation, I think it's going to hurt the Brewers a ton. I think that's a really good call. This guy is extraordinarily valuable. You know, I was going to say I like Tom Murphy a little bit more than Danny Jansen, but Danny Jansen was right there. They're neck and neck for me as my sleeper. Let's move on to the first base position, though. Who do you have for us?
CJ Krohn, average ADP is 250, and I have I ended up with him on my team in at least three leagues, AL or mixed. Didn't care, wanted him. When you look at, there's some reasons why I like him. You look at his expected contact. Just go to the Baseball Savant leaderboards and search, and you're going to see him high on a lot of lists. He's not the guy that you go in there thinking is going to be there, but he's there. He makes a lot of hard contact. And I like him in Detroit because he's going to play every day. And you know, if we have this abbreviated season, that this type of guy who's on a 1 year contract is pretty much going to play every single day. You can't play the platoon advantage and say, oh, I'm going to draft a guy. He's a left hand. He's going to get most of the at bats. I don't think you can take that. You need to maximize your plate appearances. And this is a guy who's going to play if we have a 48 game season, a 50, a 60, an 80. He's going to be out there just about every single day. That's the kind of guy I want. And at this price, I'm buying all day long.
He's a guy, he's a name that I keep hearing as well, CJ Krohn. He would have been the number two name on my list. I'm going to kind of cheat with mine. And this isn't something that I've talked about in the podcast. So I'm actually going to talk about it a fair amount. So the Rays right now have so many weapons. They've got so much depth. I mean, they traded for Randy Arozarena. They traded for him and he's like their fifth or sixth outfield. They have so many pieces. But what they're going to do at first base is extremely obvious. They've got G-Man Choi, and they've got Jose Martinez. And Choi destroys right-handed pitchers. He's horrible against left-handed pitchers. Jose Martinez is the complete opposite. Over the last 5 years, he's been one of the best hitters in the league against lefties. So what I would like to do is, if you're not playing one of these ESPN standard leagues with three bench spots, if you're in a league with six, seven, eight bench spots, I'm drafting both of these guys. I want Choi and I want Martinez. And if it's a daily lineup change league, I'm just going to look and see, are they playing a lefty? Okay, I'm playing Martinez. Are they playing a righty? Okay, I'm playing Choi. Because when you put these two together, they're splits against righties and they're splits against lefties. It's the same as Freddie Freeman. And I'm not exaggerating. And you can get these guys in the last and second to last rounds.
Yeah, it really depends on your league format. I think one thing I'd be concerned with in that strategy is in a shortened season, and this is something I've been hedging bets on throughout the offseason. The shorter this season is, I think the more unusual pitching staff utilization becomes. And if they can carry a 14-man pitching staff, maybe they have the opener who comes in and does the first three or four guys. Then you've got a bulk guy who does three or four innings. And so if they're starting a lefty, that lefty may only be out there for one plate appearance. And then you might have a bunch of righties. So I could see that particular situation, a wrench being thrown into that. If these managers, the ones that were already creative in normal situations, get extra creative with extra toys in their toolbox. I mean, they're going to be essentially managing a September roster size over this abbreviated season, if we even have one. And so I could see them getting more creative and seeing more of these openers, especially early on in the season when these guys, I mean, let's be real, we're recording this on June 5th, right? You know, if they don't get something done here by Monday, I'm concerned there isn't going to be a season. When they've looked at the weeks of spring training that they want and everything to get ready for the season, if they're talking about a July 1 or a July 4th launch, these guys need to be in camp, like an actual camp starting next week. And that's where I'm concerned where things are, because, you know, as of this morning, you know, the players were like, you know, they said 112, that got rejected. The owners said now they want 48. So they're going the other direction. Instead of getting closer, instead of saying, fine, we'll do 80 games, you know, they're going the other direction. And that's, you know, that's concerning, but, you know, we'll see. At the end of the day, I'm probably like 60%. Do we have a season? But, you know, 2 weeks ago, I was more like 90%.
I'm moving down too. I was saying last week on the show, I'm 70%. Now I'd say, yeah, I'm about 55, 60. And I don't feel good about that. It's a really frustrating spot. And the owners are never going to recover from this. Like, for the next 30 years, people are going to be furious at the owners. Just give us baseball. Come on, people.
What's frustrating for me is it's like, what, 17, 18 years of profit year over year over year over year. The last year, they get the gigantic windfall from selling BAMTech. And, you know, they retain a share of it, but they also got like a $1.5 billion windfall from selling that. And not a dime of that went directly to the players. It wasn't like, okay, we're going to keep this. Players, you got this, and divvy it up. It all stayed with the owners. And, you know, love them or hate them, Scott Boras said it best, owners are trying to privatize the profits and socialize the losses. And, you know, 18 years, year after year of gigantic growth, take a loss for a few months and then recover. But if you, like, shut it down and don't do anything,
then you're taking a loss for the next 10 years because a lot of people are going to stop watching.
Go back and watch. I mean, yes, the sport recovered after 1994, but it took time. You know, and then you got disruption. It took some time.
And it took the steroid era.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're going to go on to the second base position in just a second. But first, I want to say congratulations to the winner of the Fielder's Choice Baseball Gift Set, Trevor from Minnesota. Congratulations to Trevor. We've got two more giveaways going on. We're giving away a Fielder's Choice wallet. It's made from vintage baseball glove leather, and it smells just like it. Every single one of them is unique. You guys are going to love it. And we're also giving away a signed Trevor Story Rockies jersey. If you want to enter in for this contest, all you need to do is leave an honest review at Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, and then send a screenshot of that review to contest@fantasypros.com. And if you want to check out the details, you can find them at fantasypros.com/MLB contest. All right, Jason, second base, who do you have as a sleeper that you like?
First, I want to say it's good that Trevor May can still win prizes in Minnesota during the offseason. So, you know, that's great. With second base, I'm actually going to stay in Detroit and go with Jonathan Scope. Average ADP of 313. A lot of the same arguments that I applied to Crone apply to Scope here. He's going to play every day, 30 home run guy, and it's for a club. Even in a 48 to 50 game season, Detroit's not going to compete. but Scope's on a 1-year deal. Let him play. And I just, at the price, I just love the price. And he's somebody that I have been able to pick up on a number of rosters throughout draft season, because that's cheap power. I mean, we know what he can do. Yeah, it's going to take, you know, going to Detroit knocks in a little bit, but he's still a very potent bat. And where he's going at the position makes him a nice bargain.
It is so easy to wait at second base and either get, I agree, Scope or Starlin Castro. And Scope, the last 4 years, 20-plus home runs every single year. You look at him over the last 4 years compared to the other second baseman, he's third in home runs with 101. He has more home runs in the past 4 years than Javi Baez.
Yeah, well, one of them can hit sliders. But in all seriousness, though, it blows my mind that Scope is 40th on the second base rankings. And you, like,
it's amazing, isn't it?
You know, as much as I like the bat to ball skills of Dick Madrigal, I mean, as he's five spots above, and he's ADP about 20. He's almost two full rounds above. Nick Solak, all bat, no glove, still going in front of him.
Garrett Hampson's not even gonna play.
Right? John Birdie, Mr. September, and all those steals. How repeatable is that? And he's up there, you know, 50 spots ahead of him. Luis Arraez, another bat to ball, you know, Nick Madrigal with more experience. You know, these are the guys. Michael Chavis, which one shows up? Is it the Chavis that was awesome in April and May and early June, or the guy that sucked the rest of the year?
Right. He might not even stay in the lineup.
So these are all the guys that are going way in front of him. And his, you know, Scope's just sitting out there. And really, that's where he sat all draft season. He really didn't move up the chain. He just kind of sat there. But he's going to play every day. And there's a lot of value in playing every day.
Lock him in for 20 homers. Lock him in for 60, 70 ribbies. His batting average isn't going to be great, but it's going to be 250 plus. That's not going to kill you. You can get a guy with power, runs, RBIs this late in drafts at second base. Yeah, I'm waiting at second base and I'm either getting Castro or Scope. All right, let's go to the shortstop position. Who do you have at shortstop, Jason?
I'm going to stick at home and go with Willy Adames. Yeah. Average ADP at 331.
Awesome in the second half.
Yes. Yes, he was. You know, somebody gets to watch him play every day. You know, his plate appearance, you could see him maturing as a hitter as the season went on. It would not be much. It was a frequent occurrence early in the season. Fastballs up and sliders away, which is how you dealt with them. Then he made his adjustments, would lay off the fastballs up and in and make pitchers come into the zone and then hit that with authority. And so that's where, you know, you're seeing the maturity. And I mentioned earlier with Jansen about the demands of a young player at catcher. Well, shortstop's next. That curve gets blown by, you know, historically, you see the guys that come up in that position that can do exceedingly well, but it's okay being really good at that position too. So what if you're not Francisco Lindor and you're not running, you're not the five-tool talent, but if you can, you can still be very productive down there. And again, that's a guy that's going to play every single day.
No doubt about it.
And he's going to hit in the middle. He's going to hit, you know, he's going to hit fifth or sixth in that Tampa Bay lineup, maybe seventh. But he's still going to hit in the lineup that I, even in the full season, really liked. Even trying to remove my fandom from that, liked how that roster was being put together. But his price, people slept on what he was doing down the stretch, and it shows in his ADP this season because he's better than this. He should be going higher in drafts than he has been.
So what is his upside? I mean, he's as young as he is. What is he, 20, 24 years old, and he hit 20 bombs last season. How good can he be?
I think there's 30 in him eventually. It may not come with his days in Tampa Bay in that ballpark, but it would, you know, it get him in the right place. I think there's 30 home run potential there. You know, he will slow. He's never going to be the guy that steals a bunch of bases, but he can still run well. But defensively, you've seen him early in his career. There were things where he could make the great play look routine and make the routine play look troublesome, you know, tough. You know, he had trouble doing the routine plays. Then, again, you watch him throughout the season, you see that getting better. And as he got more confidence in the field, that translated to his confidence at the plate because he was taking those field struggles with him to the plate. And I sound like a radio guy talking a bunch of cliches, but it's true. It's what I witnessed watching every single game of them last year. As his confidence grew, his results grew.
So last year after April, he batted .265 with 19 homers, 56 runs scored. He really struggled in April, but this is the player that he is. I mean, that's a 25 home run, 75 run guy whose batting average isn't going to hurt you. And he's still young. He's probably going to get better than that. I like the call on Adames for sure. Let's go to the third base position, Jason.
Well, because he qualifies in the rankings, I had to find room for Ian Happ somewhere. So yeah, sure.
This is another name that keeps coming up on the podcast.
This is where I have Ian Happ. I mean, ADP of 286. When I took a look at Ian Happ going in the offseason, he was actually part of Bold Prediction Series that I did at RotoWire. One of the things that I found with him was, strikes out a bunch, walks a bunch, but If you take a look at him, we saw what he did last year, 11 home runs and 156 plate appearances, which is great. I mean, you can see the potential there, but and he even reduced his strikeout rate from 36 to 25%, which is what you want to see. I mean, there's still a lot of swing and miss in his game, but a lot of it came from two strike counts. And because he works counts and he's so passive, I think that's detrimental to his approach. And you saw some growth in that direction last year, because in 2018, he was caught a lot with the bat on his shoulder. And 31% of his strikeouts were him standing at the plate for a called third strike. I mean, you can't do that. Two strikes is like, swing, do something, try to protect, but you can't be fooled like that. I don't know if he was looking for something and expecting something else, like, hey, I'm gonna look slider, and then he gets locked up with a fastball. Not exactly sure what was happening there, but you saw some growth in that where he was not as passive last year. And if he could continue that growth, I think there's a lot, there's some hidden potential there, because we know what he's capable of in spurts, but just those spurts have not become a sustained supply chain of results, if you will. That's what I want to see from him. It's like, okay, if I have him and I'm seeing a guy holding a bat on his shoulder, getting deep in the counts, let's suspend reality and say we're talking about a full season. Going back to April, if I see that, I'm cutting bait and I'm out. But if I'm seeing him being aggressive, getting out there early on the count, because Alex Fast at PitchCon did a presentation and talked about weighted on base average on first pitch and how it's getting higher and higher. The league is getting more aggressive early in the count. Ian Happ needs to join on that parade, because it's killing him to wait deep in the counts where the results are just, if you just look at the results tree from getting in the counts, the most important pitch in any at bat is the 1-1 count, because there's such a disparity between going 2-1 and 1-2, right? But you get down to a two strike count, Lord help you, because there's not a lot of production down there unless a pitcher's making a mistake, because they have all the advantage.
You're exactly right. So Ian Happ, over his entire career, per 162 game pace, 26 homers, 9 stolen bases, .246 batting average. He's going to score some runs because he walks so much as well. 75 runs, 75 RBIs. That's been his pace. Now, I don't know if he plays 100. Well, obviously, no one's playing 160 games, but prorated to a 162 game season, that's who he's been. What's the difference between him and Kevin Biggio? I mean, Kevin Biggio is faster, but Happ has more power. And so the home runs and stolen bases combined are going to be about the same. The runs and RBIs are going to be about the same. The batting average is going to be about the same. Kevin Biggio is going 125th overall. Ian Happ isn't even being drafted in a lot of leagues.
Yeah, gets back to some recency bias there. People last year, I'm going to give Ian Happ another chance. Flops, okay, I'm out. Talent. Sometimes it takes talent a while to surface consistently. And again, at this price, there's a lot of profit here for people willing to give him another chance.
Right. And I'm not saying, don't hear this wrong, I'm not saying Ian Happ is a top 125 baseball player. I'm saying Ian Happ's underrated and Kevin Biggio is vastly overrated in my mind. I mean, Kevin Biggio, throughout the minor leagues, he played in the minor leagues for 4 years. He batted .255 with a .799 OPS. That's okay. Is that somebody that you want to rely on in the 10th round of your fantasy drafts? I don't. Especially when you get someone like Ian Happ 12 rounds later. So, okay, let's see here. Let's go outfield. I'm going to get two outfielders from you. We're going to go three starting pitchers and one relief pitcher. So who do you have at outfield?
An outfield, one of the guys I really like, again, at price, at average ADP at 286, is Corey Dickerson. Because there aren't too many batters that have hit 300 in back-to-back seasons over the past 2 years. He's one of them. Hit 318 with the Pirates, hit 304 last year between Pittsburgh and Miami. What I like about him is he's going to hit in the middle of that Marlins lineup, and he's going to play every day. You can sense a theme in these picks, but this is a guy who's going to be, and if you hit in the middle of a lineup in a normal season, if you hit cleanup in a lineup, you can fall into 80 runs batted in just by being in that spot in the lineup, right? And so let's say, like, if we're trying to say, can a guy hit 10 home runs and drive in 50 in an 80-game season? Yeah, that's what's possible from a cleanup hitter. And we know he's a bat to ball. There used to be the profile against him that, hey, he can't hit lefties. Well, that hasn't been a problem the last couple of years. He has a much better approach against those, and he's been able to do that. So that's why you've seen that batting average. You know, once he left Coors, everybody's like, oh, forget it. He's not going to be able to hit.
Then he hit 24 home runs in Tampa, 27 in Tampa.
Yep.
Last year, he carried a 906 OPS. The guy's a hitter through and through.
He had one bad year batting at the 245 that first year coming over to the AL, but 312, 304, 245, 282, 300, 304. That is a good batting average hitter. Now you're going to put him in the middle of the lineup, and that Marlins lineup has some talent around him. He could fall into a number of RBIs, and you know he's freely the 286 in the outfield is well down that chart. I mean, I want to say he's not even in the top. If you look at where he's at, he is coming in at 78th. In the outfield rankings.
He's one of the players I have the most shares of, and I haven't talked about him a ton just because he's just kind of this boring guy that's not especially exciting to talk about, but he's going to help you win a fantasy league because you can't get batting average later. You can get power later super easily, and you can get power out of him, and you can get a ton of batting average. I love the call. I'm getting more shares of Avisail Garcia, obviously. Everyone knows that. I've got a lot of shares of Luis Robert. I've got a lot of shares of Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Besides that, Corey Dickerson's probably my most owned guy in best ball leagues. Who else do you have for us at the outfield position?
Average ADP of 303 is Trent Grisham in San Diego. What I love about Grisham is his ability to get on base. It's a skill he's owned all throughout the minor leagues, independent of the run environment he's played in. He's had some really nice parks, some not so nice parks, but he's always had the ability to get on base. And that's why San Diego wanted to acquire him. Because you couple him with Tommy Pham and look at last year's lineup. San Diego struggled last year. I mean, they've got talent, no doubt. You look across, you know, with Machado and Tatis Jr., you know, they've got talent in that lineup, but they were 27th as a team and on base percentage last year. You can't score runs if you can't get on base. So they went out and acquired Tommy Pham, who can work a count, is one of the most disciplined hitters out there. And then you get Trent Grisham, two guys that know how to get on base and then put them in front of the run producers. I think Grisham, right, I've seen some projections of him hitting seventh in the lineup, him hitting second in the lineup. If you move him, if they put him down, cut him, it's not worth it. But if he's up there hitting in between, maybe even hitting leadoff. Like, I know Tatis hit leadoff last year, but you know you can do something like Pham, Grisham, Tatis, and Tatis could have a monster year with those two guys on base and the pitches that he would see with one or both of those guys on base, depending on the situation. But I really like this kid. A lot of your last memory of him is botching a fly ball or the defensive issue that he had in Milwaukee. But this kid can get on base. There's a reason why San Diego went out and acquired him. And at 303, I'd love the price that the market was leaving him out there. 85th on the outfield board.
I think you might have just named the only name we haven't talked about in the last 5 months. I don't know why, but we've never mentioned Trent Grisham. And this is a really interesting case. Well, first of all, you said Tommy Pham. I think that's his direct comp. I think he's a very similar type of player to Pham. I mean, this is a guy who stole 38 bags back in 133 games in 2017. Last year, he hit 26 bombs, 12 stolen bases in just 97 minor league games, batted 300 with a 1,000 plus OPS. That's really dang good. I mean, this is a quality baseball player. I know they've got a lot of pieces in San Diego, but there's also going to be DH. He's going to play every day. Former first round pick, 15th overall, but back then he went by the name Trent Clark. Former top 50 prospect, and he just kind of fizzled out a little bit in the minor leagues. But this is a true five-category talent at the fantasy baseball level. Maybe the batting average isn't quite there. He's not going to bat 300 like he did in the minors last year, but I think he's going to help you in at least four categories. All right, I already named a lot of other outfielders that I'm getting a lot of shares of. Let's go to the starting pitcher position. I'm going to get three names from you. Who do you want to start us with?
So I'm going to start with Chris Bassitt at 352.
Another name we haven't talked about. Awesome.
Oh, wow. I really do think I'm the only guy on the Chris Bassitt bandwagon this year. And he was on my final roster in Tout Wars. He was on my final roster in Labor and at least one of the league. And what I like about him, because I have this new a theory, my own personal theory on things, but anybody recovering from Tommy John surgery, the more I look at it, the more I don't want to touch these guys until they are two full calendar years post-surgery. And I know a lot of the times we hear a guy with surgery and say, okay, he's going to come back. He'll be pitching in 10 to 12 months. Well, pitching and, you know, pitching and throwing are two different things. And it's like the, and you talk to anybody who's had Tommy John surgery, it is command is the last thing that comes back. Well, a pitcher without command sucks. I don't want him. And you just look back last year. Look at Yu Darvish. People that went all in on Yu Darvish early on in the season were pulling their hair out.
He was dropped in 70% of leagues.
Exactly. He stunk. But then you get into the summertime, and then he went on that amazing run. But it's high, it's hidden in his overall numbers because, you know, 6-8 final record, ERA was high. But if you had him down the stretch, he won you a league.
He was a league winner, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then you say with Bassett, same type of thing. Got off to a bad start. But as the season wore on, you got into August and September, he looked very effective. And the reason why I like him is because the young studs in front of him in that team, Puck, Lizardo, Montas, you know, those guys, Manaea, they're all going in front of Bassett. But if you ask me at the regular, if you ask, you know, if you were talking to me back in January and February, who's going to lead that staff in innings? It's Bassett. I had that all year long, and I wrote about him in depth. But, you know, sitting there at 352 is just, you know, that's free money. Basically, he's just way down there, and he was always there. I didn't have to reach for him. He was always there, unless I'm at an auction and somebody else had to, you know, somebody else was sitting on some money. You're like, okay, I guess we're going to dance on this one. But yeah, he was always sitting out there.
That's an interesting call. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me looking at it. He's not going to hurt you in ratios. So, okay, you're talking about guys coming off Tommy John. Denelson Lamet had Tommy John to start the 2018 season. He came back, struggled for a couple weeks, and then was absolutely dominant. Which side are you on with Denelson Lamet?
I am on the side that I need to see a third pitch out of him until I can really
apparently he has it. Apparently he has this super special third pitch that's going to be dynamic.
That's why I need to see it because sure. You know, this was last year, and the same thing would go for his teammate who I like, Joey Lucchese as well, but that's Lucchese, that's what's holding him back. Lucchese has, you know, as a lefty, can just shut down lefties. You know, he's got the fastball and he's got the curve, but he doesn't have a third pitch. And last year, like his ERA, he got punished third time through the order, like a 7.32 ERA. I mean, his overall numbers just took a beating because they left him out there too long. San Diego doesn't need to do that this year. And the same would apply to Lamet because I love San Diego's bullpen. And if they get aggressive with the usage, they don't have to leave Lamet out there. But I want to see, before I can really buy in on Lamet, I want to see the third pitch. Until that third pitch comes along, I'm like, okay, fine, you guys go chase. But if this new pitch is a real thing for him, I'm buying because I liked what I saw of him before he got hurt.
Is San Diego's bullpen as good as New York Yankees bullpen now?
If everybody is healthy, I know they had an issue with Trey Wingardner as spring training was wrapping up. So assuming full health, San Diego, New York, Tampa Bay, three best bullpens in baseball.
Kirby Yates, Emilio Pagan, Jose Castillo, Drew Pomeranz was incredible in the pen last year. Matt Strom, Craig Stauman, you mentioned Trey Wingardner. Michael Baez, I don't think he makes the rotation.
They can really shorten the game. I mean, they can, there's no reason they have to leave these guys out for a third time through the order penalty. Honestly, to go an opener, put these guys in and then let these guys go.
Yeah.
They could really shorten the game.
You talked about you could have 14 pitchers on your staff. Why would they not call up Mackenzie Gore and Luis Patino and just let them pitch out of the pen?
Especially without the minor leagues. If there's no minor league season, that could be their 13th and 14th guy.
Man, this team is just nasty.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of upside with the Padres. And Padres fans hate me because I'm really low on Tatis. I'll never hear the end of it. Every single time he gets like a base hit, like a base hit in the hole and he beats out an infield single, my Twitter gets blown up by Padres fans. I love you guys. Okay, so let's move on. You said Chris Bassett. Let's get your number two starting pitcher here.
So I will go, the other guy I like is similar ADP as Freddy Peralta.
Yes,
and I know I'm taking a reach on Peralta.
Oh man, I'm so excited about Freddy Peralta again. And I don't want to say it because I burned people last year, but he's got some upside.
Yeah. Well, the new pitch thing is really my thing here with him, because if you saw the video of him pitching with his new slider in the Dominican League, it looks filthy. And if he can, like, I don't ever think Peralta is going to come up with a changeup, but a good breaking ball can serve as a good off-speed pitch. And if he can throw two different breaking balls and can throw the slider with the quality that he was throwing at the Dominican League, along with the curveball and that high-spin fastball that he has, I'd like him where, you know, I'd like him at the price that he's sitting out there at, for everybody to take the chance on him. And that's where I liked him going into last year. I know a lot of us got burned on. Right now he's the 100th starting pitcher off the board. And he's going, you know, right in front of Jake Arrieta. It's like,
why okay, was he
going well in front of Jake Arrieta? But that's where he's going. And just the potential, even last year, with all the struggles that he's had, he can still miss bats with what he had. And if he's going to bring this slider, and again, go watch the, if you go find my new pitch tracker at Fangraphs, there's a link to that slider in there and go look at it. It's filthy. And I would love to see that new pitch come into this season, because I have made sure that Peralta is on a few of my teams, because if this clicks, just look back at last year. Frankie Montas was hot garbage heading into the draft season last year.
Yeah, he was striking out like 6 batters per 9 innings.
He adds that splitter and starts using it like he did, and look what happened with Frankie Montas
right.
last year.
So does Freddie Peralta make the rotation? Because, I mean, the Brewers' rotation sucks. You've got Brandon Woodruff and Adrian Hauser, fine. After that, Mike Moriarty, Brett Anderson, Eric Lauer.
Some of those guys I think would benefit from this unusual usage that we're talking about. And like Eric Lauer is a great example. If you're bored after listening to this podcast, go look at Eric Lauer's game logs from last year, and in particular focus on 3 games that he did in Coors Field last year. 8 innings, something like 35 base runners. It just obliterated his final numbers. But go look at what he did at Coors Field last year.
Whoa, everything else, 1 run against, 2 runs against. Yeah, I used him in DFS all the time, especially when he was in a good ballpark. Because, you know, he's playing half his games in Milwaukee, and then you're right, he got torn up in Colorado in 3 games. Besides that, he was the man. Quality start pretty much every time.
It was, I want to say, because I remember tweeting about this in the offseason, about, like, hey, what happened with Eric Lauer? But it did something to his final numbers. It was just unbelievable how much they were crushed. But yeah, his final ERA, he had a 2.94 ERA and a 1.13 whip at one point before he got into Colorado and got blasted for like the second or third time. But those numbers, you just go look at those game logs and check out Colorado. It's bad. And so, like, I like Eric Lauer. And if you could use him, you know, pick your matchups for him. Like you said, use him in DFS, quality start, time in and time out when he wasn't pitching in Coors. But, you know, I'd like him in that rotation. But again, Freddie Peralta, I think, is the guy with the upside there. If things come together for him.
All right. One more starting pitcher for the all sleeper team. Who do you have for us?
I'm going to go with Jordan Montgomery at 283 and the Yankees. With the Yankees being fully healthy, I like what I've seen from Jordan Montgomery when he's pitched in a shorter season. I feel better about him than I did over the course of a full season. I thought there would be some kind of workload restriction on him over a full season, but in a shorter season, I like him. He throws a lot of strikes, changes speeds, is a lefty pitching in Yankee Stadium, and could use the bigger part of that ballpark to keep the ball in the yard. And so I just love the pitchability out of this guy. And he could, if everybody's healthy on that club, he could be pitching with a lot of run support behind him.
I think that makes a lot of sense. Now I'm going to throw in another name that I haven't talked about a ton. Eliezer Hernandez, if he makes the Marlins rotation, was one of the top 3 starting pitchers in the minor leagues last year. Came up and on paper numbers struggled. Underlying metrics suggested he was extraordinarily unlucky. Very talented young pitcher. I think the easiest sleeper is Rich Hill. I mean, I get it. He's 38, 39 years old, but whenever he's healthy, he's awesome. Now he's finally healthy. He wasn't being drafted ADP 390 because he wasn't going to play the first half of the season. Well, the first half of the season is already gone. He's going to be in the opening week rotation. Josh James, if he gets in the bullpen. AJ Puck, you already mentioned, because no innings limit. Maybe Garrett Richards finally stays healthy. Brendan McKay could dominate if he makes the Rays rotation. Those are some names I like. All right, last player on our all-sleeper team, relief pitcher. Who do you have for us?
So I got actually 2 guys I'd like to hit. One, because I talked about the unusual pitching usage, and Seth Lugo was like made for this season. You know, Seth Lugo, we saw what he could do last year.
They need to just put him in the rotation.
He could do anything. He could do rotation. He could do multi-inning relief. He could close. He has the stuff to do anything.
If Edwin Diaz struggles again, Lugo could be the best closer in baseball.
Right, right. And I mean, if you look at, if we were talking about the expected stats with Crone and earlier, but yeah, go look at Diaz. Everything says Diaz should be better this year. What if he isn't? You know, and here's Lugo sitting out there at ADP at 253, and he could flourish in any role the Mets use him in. And so if this season truly is a short one with unusual utilization, this is the guy that could really flourish in this. Not like he didn't flourish last year, but his fantasy value could take off because he could have 5-6 wins, 6-8 saves, have the strikeouts, the ratios, and like, you know, he may not have one dominating category, but the depth of his contribution across the board could be of value at this price. And so I really like him. And then the other guy, I mentioned earlier, I like the White Sox lineup. I like how Grandal is going to help the pitching staff. I don't like their middle relief, and I do not like Alex Colomé, but I do like Aaron Bummer. And so, like, if the White Sox if we have a 48-60 game season, that's a sprint. Anybody can contend in that, unless you're Detroit or Baltimore, right? But the White Sox could, if they get on a heater and get stretched. I mean, can they really afford to have these nail-biting saves that Alex Colomé was putting people through last year? You look at the skills; it's a very soft foundation of skills for Alex Colomé. Meanwhile, Bummer was doing extremely well, and so if they pull the leash early on Colomé and say, "Okay, Bummer, you have the closer role." His ADP is 421. He's going undrafted in a lot of formats, but he's going to be a gigantic fab buy quickly if something falls apart there with Colomé. And so Bummer and Lugo, either one of those guys, have been on every one of my rosters in a draft because I just look at the situation, especially the later we were drafting, I wanted these guys on my team.
So I want to go back to Seth Lugo really quick because I don't think a lot of people realize just how incredible he's been. 2018, out of the bullpen, he pitched 101 innings. He had a 2.66 ERA, 1.08 whip, 103 strikeouts. 2019, 80 innings, 104 Ks, 270 ERA, 0.90 whip. Essentially, he's half of Jack Flaherty, right? He also had 7 wins last year. Jack Flaherty was the number 7 starting pitcher in fantasy baseball last year, and you're getting half of him at ADP 245. He also picked up 6 saves.
Yep. And then if you look at stats, aren't linear, but just go look at his player profile. His strikeout minus walk percentage over the 4 seasons of his career, 9, 14, 18, 28. I mean, his strikeout rate almost doubled from 17 to 19. It's like, this is clearly somebody whose profile is on the way up. And, you know, the really good spin rate on both his fastball and his curveball. He's got the chops to succeed in any role. Now, it's going to be tough for him to be like, okay, I'm moving back in the rotation. But even last year, that 2.70 ERA, I want to say he had a couple of stink bombs right out of the gate, but then was just lights out the rest of the season. That's what really killed his numbers. But he had a couple of outings right there. Like, yeah, third start of the season, one of the third innings, 5 hits, 3 runs right out of the gate. Then he had one with 4 unearned runs. But a lot of his damage was early on in the season, and then he was just lights out the rest of the way.
That's a great point. I have one more name I want to throw in before we end this all sleeper team. I'm putting Jordan Hicks on it because Jordan Hicks, I mean, I saw Pedro Martinez pitch in his heyday. He's probably the most exciting player in any sport I've ever seen. Second is Jordan Hicks. When you see him in person, oh my gosh, 104 miles per hour with nasty movement. There's nothing else like it. And he's going to be the closer for the Cardinals now that he's coming back healthy.
Yeah, he gets back into his surgery was the end of June 2019. So it's like he will be right at a year removed when these guys are talking about, and that's where I'm not on the same page there. Because now closer's a little different, you know, obviously velocity allows you a lot of mistakes. And when you can hit triple digits on the reg, you know, it's a little different than a guy in 90, 92 missing his spots. But this is where, and I've seen a lot of Jordan Hicks love, but to me, this gets back to my theory of, I don't want somebody 2 years. I may give a few more months towards a relief pitcher, but I'm not on board with Hicks at his old market value. Now, if he's sitting out there, if everybody in the league is like me and you want to take him, more power to you, because you should take advantage of that. But that's where my concern is.
He's on the waiver wire in virtually every single league right now. Do you think that Gallegos is the closer right now, Ryan Helsley, or do you think Hicks is the favorite?
When I've taken somebody off that team for saves, it's been Gallegos.
Okay.
He obviously doesn't have the big velocity everybody else does, but he's got the pitchability. Hits his spots, works up and down in the zones, changes his speeds, and doesn't waver. And so I was impressed watching him pitch last year, and I think skills-wise, he has the lead out of the gate. Now, that said, he's just placeholding for Hicks. Whenever they're comfortable letting Hicks take the mound again, it's his job. But I would hedge my bets with Gallegos.
All right, Jason. Well, that's all for today's show. Really appreciate you coming on. It's frustrating without having baseball, but it's just a good relief for everybody with everything going on in the world to just be able to think about fantasy baseball and talk about it. And hopefully we get a season.
Yeah, let's see what happens over here over the next couple of days with the negotiations, and maybe owners will come to their senses and we can get something, because I think Levi Weaver on Twitter said it best. It's like, maybe it's good that we don't have these distractions so people can focus on the issues in hand and try to do something about it. That said, that's not for people need something else to just kind of take a little bit of peek at, because it's exhausting, you know, with everything else happening on all fronts. It's just some people just need a mental timeout from a little bit, and having baseball to watch for a couple of hours, maybe just a mental timeout some folks need.
All right, guys, give Jason a follow on Twitter if you don't already. It's at his name, Jason Collette. That's Collette. And don't forget to sign up for the giveaways we've got going on right now. We're giving away a signed Trevor Story Rockies jersey, and we're giving away a Fielder's Choice wallet. It's made from vintage baseball glove leather, and it smells just like it. You guys are going to love it, and you can check out the details at fantasypros.com/contest. For Jason Collette, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your baseball.